We're looking at the story of Ruth. So I want you to open your Bible to Ruth chapter number 1. We're going to start at verse number 19. The story of Ruth starts as the story of Naomi, a woman, a married woman with two boys and a husband, that because of a famine, a drought at her hometown of Bethlehem, has to move to Moab on the other side of the Dead Sea from her home country of Judea. While she's there, her husband dies. She marries off her two boys to local ladies, and then her two boys die, and there are no grandkids whatsoever. And so Naomi is very upset at how her life has just dumped, how it is horrendous. She hears that the famine back in Bethlehem seems to have been broken finally. And so 10 years after she left, she decides to go back home. Her intention was to go back home alone. But one of her daughters-in-law will simply not stay in Moab. Both of the daughters-in-law wanted to go with her to begin with. They love her. They care about her. But Naomi is very bitter. And so she talks one of them out of going with her, but the other one she can't talk out of it. Ruth, whose story it kind of shifts to next, says, I'm going with you. Where you go, I go. Where you live, I live. Your people are going to be my people. Your God's going to be my God. Where you die, that's where I'll die. Where you're buried, that's where I want to be buried. I'm not going to leave you, and I will take an oath in the name of the God we both believe in, he who is, that that's going to be the way it works. And so, verse 19 of Ruth chapter 1 says, the two of them went on from Moab until they came to Bethlehem. A couple of days' travel easily. When they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. I mean, this is big news to have a couple of new faces show up in town, and one of them looks a little familiar. The women said, is this Naomi? Now, Naomi's name in Hebrew means pleasant one. So she said back to them, don't call me pleasant anymore. Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Mara. Mara means bitter, for the Lord, the Almighty, has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and he who is brought me back empty. Why call me pleasant when he who is has testified against me, and he who is has brought calamity upon me? So you can tell that Naomi is in the pits of despair. She is horrendously depressed as she comes back. She is a bitter lady, having lost her husband, lost her home before that, lost her boys, lost any hope of having grandkids. And she believes God did it to her. She blames God. And we know that this is not unusual for people that have gone through tough times to blame God for it all. And so we'll let her kind of wallow in that to begin with. God will turn that joy back, or turn that depression back into joy later. But leave her bitter to begin with. So Naomi returned. Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab. They came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. Now, the first sheaf of barley is cut on the first day of the week that follows the Sabbath that falls during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So we're talking about the first Jewish month. We're talking about anywhere from the second half of March until, well, the very beginning of April. That's when the barley harvest kicks off. Chapter 2. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Now, more than likely, he is a cousin of Elimelech, the late husband of Naomi. Just to give you a little background on what I think about him, he's not married, and yet he seems to be of the same generation as Elimelech and Naomi, so or maybe just slightly younger than them. Why? Why is he unmarried? Well, we know that some men, for whatever reason, perhaps shyness on their part, clumsiness, social clumsiness, end up just never getting married. They're good people, but they just don't get married. And so Boaz seems to be in that boat, but he's a very honorable person, and he is a very successful businessman. And he's also in the line of redemption for the continuation of the Elimelech line. Remember, the levirate marriage works in that if it looks like a line is going to be dead-ended by the death of a man, then the closest eligible relative of that man marries the widow and raises up children, the first one being in honor of the late husband. Now, I'm going to tell you ahead of time that if Naomi had been a little bit younger, then she would have been the one that Boaz should have ended up marrying in this story. But as I kind of already told you last session, I believe that Naomi is probably postmenopausal, so she cannot have kids. And so that kind of takes her out of the loop as a potential for raising up family in honor of the late Elimelech. But her daughter-in-law, Ruth, the widow of Elimelech and Naomi's son, she is in the running for participating in this levirate marriage ceremony. So verse 2, Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor. Now this is the custom that was put in place by Mosaic law. God is the one that directed this, that the earth is the Lord's, the land is the Lord's, the property belongs to God, the promised land totally belongs to God, but he farms it out to the tribes and the clans and the family groups in those tribes in the form of inheritance. And so these family groups are supposed to plant and harvest grain, and then they give a tenth of the grain to God to kind of honor the fact that he's the one that owns the property. And then they live off the other 90%. When they harvest their grain, they are told, you cannot harvest the edges of your fields. And this has been interpreted meaning the swing of a sickle. I don't know if that was accurate, but that's how it was interpreted. So that perimeter on every field was automatically the property of poor people, the working poor. And then beyond that, anything that drops in the process of cutting these sheaves, the way you would do it is you'd grab a handful of stalks and you'd cut the bottom down near the ground, and then you'd use one of the strands probably to wrap around and make a little sheaf. And then you'd put that sheaf over into a stack or lay it in the ground. And so anything that drops in the process of making that little sheaf, you leave it on the ground. That automatically belongs to the poor. And then when you collect up all those sheaves and put them on a cart and take them out of the field, if you left any behind, you know, forgot them, or they drop off the cart, you leave them laying on the ground. Those automatically belong to the poor people. And then the poor people would come in behind and pick up all that excess, all that gleanings, cut the edges of the field and all of that, and then that would belong to them for their own use, and then they could probably sell some of it in order to get other things that they needed for their life. So Ruth is aware of that being the custom here in Israel. She's probably been had that explained to her by Naomi, and she goes, "Mom," because I'm sure she addressed her in a formal fashion, Ima, my mother, let me go out there and do some gleaning for the two of us. Because Naomi's still in her depression, just kind of hanging around. So she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out, and she went, and she gleaned in the field after the reapers. And so she's out there picking up whatever gets dropped, putting that, you know, probably in a little place in her inner apron that forms when she pulls out the edge of her robe. And then we're told she happened, and I don't think this is accidental. I think God kind of worked this out. She happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. Now, Bethlehem's the city, and he has apparently fields all around in the hills. And so he's coming out checking on the progress of the harvest. He's got people working for him. That's another one of the reasons we understand that he seems to be pretty well-to-do. He's a good businessman. He has people working for him. So he's coming out and checking on the progress. He said to his reapers, "He who is be with you." And another thing we know about him is he is very faithful to God. They answered, "Oh, he who is bless you." I get the impression they love their boss. Boaz then said to his young men who were in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" So he comes out here on a regular basis, and he, as a good boss, is familiar with the people working for him. And so, of course, he notices on this day a new face, a new shape, a new form. And he's like, "Who's she?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "Oh, she's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she's continued from early morning until now, except for one short rest." So the supervisor fills Boaz in. Now, Boaz apparently has heard about Naomi coming home. You know, the community gossip has gotten back to him, that she is back and that she is bitter, but that she has a young Moabite daughter-in-law, who is also a widow of Naomi's son, and this young woman has been taking good care of her as she can. And so now here she is putting in a hard, sweaty day's work to take care of her mother-in-law. And so that impresses Boaz. So Boaz said to Ruth, he goes out and approaches her. Listen, my daughter. Now, this is one of the reasons I think she is younger than him, because of the way he addresses her. It doesn't necessarily mean he's old enough to be her dad, although that's possible, because I said that he's likely to be close to the same generation as Elimelech and Naomi. But he's certainly old enough to address her in this formal fashion. Listen, my daughter, don't go glean in another field or leave this one. Keep close to my young women, that is, the ladies that work for me. So don't be going to another field. You stay with my group. There's tons of fields that belong to a lot of different people surrounding Bethlehem. But Boaz is effectively saying, you stay with my company, my group. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping. Go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? So apparently had a little side conversation before he came to address her. And he said, you make sure that she is not harassed. I don't want her bothered. Now, one of the things that could have caused trouble is that she's not an Israeli. And so there might have been a little racism, a little bit of ethnic rudeness. And so he's basically warning his people, don't you treat her badly. You treat her respectfully. And so he lets her know, I've told them to leave you alone. And when you are thirsty, you go to the vessels and you drink what the young men have drawn. He takes care of his workers. He makes sure that they have fresh water to drink for their water breaks and for their meal breaks. And verse number 10. So she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I'm a foreigner? So this is quite shocking to her, to be the foreigner, the stranger in a strange land, and to have such kindness shown to her from the first time she shows up out here to work, that she can even drink the water from his employees. And so she shows how thankful she is for that. And verse number 11, Boaz answered her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law and how you left your father and your mother and your native land and came to this people that you did not know before, all that's been told to me. I know about that. May he who is repay you for what you've done, and may a full reward be given to you by he who is the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So he is honest with her. He says, I know what a big deal it is that you left your home country, your people, and have become this big supporter of your mother-in-law. And it's brought you here to this scary experience. And you know what? I pray that God will bless you for that, the true God, the God that you're embracing. And the way that he phrases it here at the end is important to the story later, and so I want to emphasize it. The Israelis had an image of God being like a protective mother bird. That was just part of their thinking process. And how God would put his wings out over them to protect them. That imagery then becomes part of the ceremony of redemption in the levirate marriage ceremony. The outer cloak the outer garment of a man that was going to redeem the widow of a relative. He would come up to her and he would fling that outer clothing around her with its little tassels attached to it, the little special tassels that showed commitment to the covenant. And that piece of clothing was referred to as a wing. And so the first part of the story here is that Boaz is praying for God to throw his wing over the top of Ruth and make her part of the community of Israel. That's his first wish for her. Later in the story, Naomi will coach Ruth to ask Boaz to fling his own wing around Ruth and redeem her as his wife. And I just love the connection of the wording between these two parts in the story, and that's why I wanted to emphasize it a little bit here today. Verse number 13. Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." So even though I don't work for you, you have been more than kind to me. And so at mealtime, get the impression that Boaz kind of showed up in time for some lunch. They would take a break during the middle of the day when it's really hot and just hang around and eat and stay in the shade and take a little siesta or converse with one another. And then they would get back to work later use the declining hours of the day when it's cooling off to kind of finish up their work. So at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here. Eat some bread, dip your morsel in the wine." So he invites her to lunch at his lunch table. He probably puts on a spread for his workers. And so he says, "Come over here, come sit with me and have some of the bread. There's a dipping sauce right there made out of some wine from last year. Go ahead and use that." So she sat beside the reapers and he passed to her some roasted grain. They take some of the roasted grain or some of the fresh grain and roast that up. And so she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. So she, I don't know what she brought to eat that day. I don't know if she was planning on eating that day other than maybe popping a few kernels of barley into her mouth as she was, gleaning. Once she'd gathered enough, she might have eaten a few of those kernels for her own sustenance that day. That might be what she'd planned on doing. But this is all changed now because of Boaz's attention to her. She got a free lunch, a very nice lunch, and more than what she could eat. So she kind of squirrels that away in her belongings to take home with her. And then when she rose to glean, everybody's starting back to work again, Boaz instructed his young men. So he goes over and talks to them privately, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves and do not reproach her." Now, there was some sort of understanding that those that are gleaning need to not get too close to the people who are doing the official harvesting. Don't crowd them. Well, Boaz says, "You let her get as close to you guys as she wants. Don't tell her to back off. In fact," verse 16, "also pull out some of the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean. Don't rebuke her." So some of the smaller hand sheaves may have been bundled into larger bundles larger sheaves to be collected on the cart. And so he tells his people, you make sure you accidentally, air quotes, drop some stuff right in front of her. Because the moment you drop it, you can't pick it back up. It's not allowed. That's the rule. So you intentionally help her out in her gleanings. And don't say anything negative to her. Now, I'm smiling here as I'm telling this story. I'm thinking that his employees are smiling about this and saying, wow, this is really cute. Our boss is smitten with this woman. He likes her. He's wanting us to do special things for her on his behalf. And so the rest of the story for the day is that she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she'd gleaned, because it's got to be usable. Got to get rid of that chaff. And it was about an ephah of barley. That's 22 liters approximately. That's 11 2-liter pop bottles full of grain. There is no way in the world that an individual would normally get that amount in gleaning in a field as a poor worker. And so this is all because of Boaz that she got that amount. So she took it up and she went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she'd gleaned, was apparently shocked by it, because that's a lot. And she also brought out and gave her the food that was left over after being satisfied. She's had quite the day. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today? Where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. And so she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. And that's where Naomi's story begins to change.